Are you recording?
I'm recording, man.
All right, let's do a podcast episode. This is Putting Time with John and Josh, like it always is. Same show. It's another one of them. And you're going to love it. It's going to be the same as it always is.
I mean, or maybe even better.
It could be better. Right. I'm not going to make any promises.
Yeah.
Hey, Josh, what's on your sweatshirt?
It's my old company's name.
Got it.
All the other ones are dirty right now, so.
Got it. We are both wearing our Putting Time t-shirts.
With a company sweatshirt over top.
That's right.
That's the official developer wardrobe.
Yeah. I need to turn my volume up, but I'm having a hard time remembering where that key is on my keyboard.
Okay. This is a discussion topic.
There we go.
This is going to be a discussion topic, isn't it?
Let's just dive into this one. In the what went well side, I'm not sure if it belongs in what went well or could be improved. I hesitated which side to put it on.
Maybe okay.
You help me figure that out. But anyway, the card says, I started yet another attempt at switching to an ErgoDox.
So remind me, is ErgoDox a keyboard?
Yes. Like the split with
it looks
the
like hands.
Layout. Yeah.
It's
and
like
it can like do tenting.
It looks like bear paws in keyboard form.
Yeah, because it has like thumb stuff going on. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm gonna put it up to the
Oh yeah.
Mm-hmm, yeah. Mm-hmm. So for some reason I thought you had one, but maybe I'm forgetting. What keyboard do you use these days?
No, I use a Keychron small format.
Is it like an 80? 80%? Oh.
It's probably more 65? Like a 65%? So this one does have arrow keys, but I also have a portable one that same company. I think they do custom ones, but this I got last fall. For years I had used a Poker 2. And that thing.
Oh, really?
Yeah, that thing. I still have it. It's.
I've been using my Poker 3 forever. I love it.
Yeah.
Yeah. But what caused me to be interested in the ErgoDox is I want a hyper key.
Okay.
And I don't believe there's any way to do that on a Poker. It can be programmed, but like what you can do with it is not quite the level you can with like an ErgoDox or some of these other keyboards that actually run like an operating system. And like you can do like a lot of customizations.
What is a hyperkey?
So hyperkey is all of the modifiers at once. So that would be shift, option, command, and control.
Okay, and it's easier than having to smash them all?
Right, so it's just pressing one key that sends all of those keys, and then you can couple that with something else. So like, for example, on my setup here, I've got that plus C for clipboard to bring up my clipboard history manager.
Nice.
Yeah.
Okay.
So anyway, that's a part of the motivation. So I started getting myself back using this keyboard, and what I've discovered, because I've done it a couple times, and I actually got this keyboard from friend of the show, Eric Creech.
Okay.
I don't know, like in 2019 maybe, and I've bounced off of it a couple times. One thing that I'm finding really helpful with this run at trying to get myself switched over is they now have a desktop application that is your keyboard layout, and it's like connected to your keyboard. And so when you press a key on your keyboard, it highlights it in this little application. So I've got a two monitor setup. I put this application on my second monitor, and then when I'm getting stuck, I can glance over and see
what am I hitting.
What am I hitting? And if I need to like switch a layer, I can then glance over there and see where's the key I'm looking for on that second layer.
Right. Okay, that makes sense.
Yeah
this is
super handy.
The keyboard I'm using is the first one that introduced the concept of layers to me. And most of it's unused.
Yeah.
Like almost all of it. Yeah. A few of them were built in, and I keep them. It's like it switches up the number row becomes function keys.
Sure.
And the other one, the number row becomes like the multimedia keys.
Play, pause. Those
yeah. Kinds of things. Yeah. And like brightness, it maps exactly to whatever's on the like laptop.
Got it.
Function keys. There's a few others though, like tilde for whatever. Oh, not for whatever reason, because this only has five rows instead of, you know, like a six. Right. Tilde is one of them.
On a layer. Yeah,
on either tab or escape, depending on which layer. And so that's really the only thing I use it for. But there's so much you can do with these things.
So true.
I keep feeling like there's other things I should do, but then, you know, I kind of forget about it.
So this connects to another thing that I'm interested in, which is Raycast. So Raycast is a replacement for like your quick search. What's it called on macOS? The like
Spotlight
search thing. Spotlight. Thank you. So instead of Spotlight, I have Raycast for like opening applications.
Okay.
But I also have it to do clipboard history. It also has like a AI ChatGPT interface you can use, which is maybe strange bedfellows with those other things I mentioned. But they're just trying to like kind of package a few things together to get you to pay them. And it worked for me. I think it's really nice. But I can do things like I can set up like ways to jump to my browser to a certain page on the internet. So, for example, I can hit hyper plus A, type in a project name for Artsy, and then jump to the GitHub page for that project. We have like maybe 100 or so GitHub projects, and it's kind of handy to be able to jump to what I'm looking for quickly. So I use Raycast as a way to create this quick hop to Safari into the web page I'm looking for.
Okay, gotcha. That makes sense. Yeah, do you remember Quicksilver?
Yes, this is what I used to use way back in the day.
Yeah, exactly. Quicksilver was like kind of the what I feel like
first of them?
I feel like it even predates Spotlight being useful.
Yeah, totally.
And it was kind of a full disk indexer, but also program launcher, and like it had macro stuff you could do. There was a lot of cool stuff in there.
Yeah.
I'm going to tie this in. I promise.
Okay.
One of the things about Quicksilver, though, that apparently has part of the secret sauce was their like fuzzy search algorithm.
Interesting.
Which basically weighted things in certain ways for launching, quick launching.
Okay.
Right. So it would do things like if there's two words that are capitalized, but they're smushed together, you could use the abbreviations of the capital letters and that would rank higher than something that was like capital and then lowercase. Anyway, I took this idea and re-implemented it in Clojure.
What?
Yeah. It's called Ballpark. I made it like 3 years ago because I was working on a quick launcher thing for the web for our web interface at my previous company.
That is so cool.
Yeah. And it is changes a few things about the algorithm, but the core of it was still like this iterative thing where it goes through and scores everything based on
wild.
Interesting.
I know you made that.
Yeah.
So but like how do you use it? What do you build it into to have it?
It into a Command K front end thing on our old old company's like web thing.
Gotcha.
I actually used it as a launcher for what all did it download? So it did all kinds of fun things. Like I kind of miss doing this kind of front end stuff. I haven't done it in a while, but you would hit Command K and then it had a whole bunch of like subsections, kind of like GitHub's Command K launcher thing has.
Okay.
And then you go into a subsection and then, for example, if it was a customer name, you could do customer names and it would use that sorting thing to be able to get
that.
That's
so cool.
Yeah. So I was able to get, cause there was a lot of clicks to get anywhere in particular. And so it was a way to, from anywhere on our
admin.
So
this is like the admin tool.
Yeah.
I kind of missed that to start. Okay.
Yeah.
Wow. You put some love into your admin tools. We have a complete shit show at Artsy. And you're reminding me about it could be improved that I'm going to get to. But before we do that, anything else about keyboards or some of this stuff?
No, I do remember this keyboard. We never revisited it. I made fun of you for like years ago because you got one with a knob and you called it your undo knob or something. And I have it wired up just to volume. And that has worked out pretty well because that's kind of what I want it to do. I don't know why. Maybe it's the audio thing in me. But anyway, I do use it.
Mm-hmm.
But
that's fun.
I don't undo.
Yeah, maybe one day you can hook it up to undo. But that's all right.
That's for the more advanced players.
One more thing I'll say about this keyboard topic is this like companion program, Keymap with two P's. That they make. It also has a heat map, so you can like enable it, and then it'll like keep track of how many presses each key has had.
Yeah.
I turned it on while I was doing some work, and then I looked at it a little while later, and like the J was bright red, and everything else was like pretty like this cool blue, meaning I press J a lot. So I guess
because you use Vim, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, and mine like would be could... like the caps lock control because I'm an Emaxer, so it would. You're always holding that, and your pinky gets the RSI.
Yeah, I'm pretty happy with my layout. I futzed with a few things. My only problem so far that I haven't quite landed is I got to figure out a better way to get to escape because right now I've got on a different layer, and as a Vim user, you need that maybe a little more accessible. So I got to figure that one out. But otherwise, pretty happy.
There's always, what is it, control left bracket or control C to exit insert mode.
It's true. Yeah. Okay. I'm going to press addressed on that one. Let's keep on programming here and what went well. And you've got some card here called Rustlet. And then in parentheses, it says Figlet in Rust.
Okay, so this might take some explaining. Do you know what Figlet is?
I don't know.
Okay. It's a pretty old, like from the 90s program that it's really just a just for fun kind of program. Okay. Unix utility that you type in Figlet and then like a message and it spits out ASCII art.
Oh, I am familiar with this. Is it like installed on machines? Like, can I?
No, you can brew install it.
I see.
Anyway, the interesting bit is it has fonts, right? So you can change, and it comes with
ASCII art fonts.
Yes, exactly. The format of them is they're text files.
The font itself is a text file.
Yes, with a few rules attached to it.
Sure.
Right. So there's actually syntax. But you can pretty easily see what the thing's going to do just by opening up the font file.
Mm-hmm.
So like 3 or 4 years ago, maybe 4 years ago now, I wanted to learn how to use this particular parser combinator library in Rust.
Wow. Okay.
So I used it. It's called NOM.
Okay.
To basically parse these font files.
Funny. Okay. Right?
So it's not a very complicated format. And so the parser combinator like file is not very long.
Okay.
The second part of that is actually using the font files.
Sure.
And I had like let this thing languish for years. And then I, for whatever reason, I picked it up a couple weeks ago and I kind of finished out all of the rules with like, there's a lot of rules about like squishing and how these things can like basically kerning at an ASCII art level. Yeah. So I have a integration test suite that actually loops through all of the Figlet versions, spits out a like text file, and that's my implementation, like my gold standard that I used my integration test.
Gold standard testing, right?
Yeah. It's pretty easy when it's just text.
Yeah. So let's describe this technique quickly.
Gold standard testing.
Yes, please.
Yeah.
And how would you compare it against like maybe a typical unit test someone might write?
Right. So unit tests are usually pretty low level.
Mm-hmm.
And gold standard testing is, or Gold Master. I can't remember which one it is.
It's Gold Master.
Okay. The idea is you, basically, if you don't have a lot of insight into how everything works at a low level, you can employ mm-hmm. this technique as an integration technique, where basically you snapshot the implementation output that you're targeting.
Yeah.
I've heard of people doing this with websites, and basically they do things like screenshotting.
Snapshot testing is a total is a technique in React for sure.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. You it's screenshots, or it's what in the React to be like what the virtual DOM or something.
Right. It's like a DOM nodes. Yeah.
Uh-huh. And so if something weird happens in your when you're refactoring or whatever, it's an outer layer that's going to just at least alert you that you did something wrong.
Yeah.
Was it Katrina? Oh, what's her name?
Owens.
Katrina Owens. Yes.
Yeah.
She talked about this at one of the conferences we went to a long time mm-hmm. ago, but mm-hmm. I think it was the idea that, you know, you don't understand an implementation or you're re-implementing it or whatever. You do this and, you just basically run the old thing.
Right.
And whatever it spits out, you keep that output.
That's like that's what you're trying to match against.
And then you try to, yes. And then you just keep going until yours matches. I mean, that really is all it is. It's mm-hmm. just like a more automated way of what we probably already do anyway, which is like, oh, that looks different. Right. You know, but how can you automate that? So that's the idea.
Yeah, it's really cool. I've very rarely used this technique, but I've always thought it was really a cool way to think about it, with like maybe like a legacy system that's a black box and you mm-hmm. can't really see what's going on inside there.
Yep.
But I very much dislike this technique in the React context that I was describing. There's actually tooling to help you create and manage these snapshots.
Okay.
And often what happens is you make a change to the system, it breaks the snapshot test, and then you just hit U to update the snapshot to match what you are now outputting. So it's like, well, what are we testing then? Like,
yeah.
If we're just kind of, like, all it is like regression, basically. It doesn't actually tell me anything about why the system behaves the way it does. And so folks don't write proper unit tests. Instead, write these snapshot tests.
Yeah.
But like, that's not really test driving anything. That's not really like producing like tests that help me understand the system. That's just like code coverage, like fake. I don't know. I hate it.
Yeah, it feels like tests do need to provide value. What was the thing that somebody once said? Write tests that are useful and no more. Or so, it was something. It's some quip where it's like a lot of people write too many tests.
That is
where it actually becomes like a burden.
Right.
It's actually costing you more than it's helping you at that point.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. So high value tests are important, and not and apparently they're not that high value if you're like chucking them every time you run the thing.
That's my theory. Cool. So what got you back into this Rust project? Just like on a whim, you like picked it back up?
Yeah, I think I was like just running through my source directory. Like I've got all my projects in there, and I was like,
that happens
oh, yeah,
to me
that
sometimes
thing.
Too. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, and I wanted to like, and then I think I just like updated libraries at first. It's like, oh, it's been a few years. Does this still build? Yeah, it still builds. Okay. And then I was like, wait, how far did I get with this? And then it was like, okay, I'm parsing the fonts, but I'm not using them. That's interesting.
What would be the next step?
Mm-hmm. Nailed
and
it.
10 hours later.
Yeah, pretty much.
Okay. I'm going to go over to Could Be Improved and circle back to something I was going to say. It says Could Be Improved Win OTP.
Okay.
So you talked about some internal tools at a previous job and how you had made this Command K thing. Sounds like you like were able to work on your internal tools and make them pretty nice. We don't do that at Artsy. We have long-suffering admins that have some pretty rough user interfaces they have to grapple with to get their jobs done. I'll specifically talk about our auctions team.
Okay.
So our auctions team take input from an auction. So this would be like the names of artworks, the artists, the prices, and a folder of images typically. And then they need to batch import those things to create the artwork pages so we can launch a sale or an auction. We sometimes call them sales.
Okay.
And so we built forever ago a Rails application to help these folks so they can like drop in a CSV file and then drop those images. They upload into the cloud. And but they do a lot of futzing in these interfaces to get the columns to line up, to find the artist instead of making a new artist, to make sure they named those images correctly so that they match up. And it's just really futzy. It's so bad that they and we have given them no help from the engineers that they hired a company. I won't even name the company because I'm going to be nice. Because I'm not going to be nice is what I should say. We hired they hired a company to write browser automation scripts.
Oh boy.
That help them do their jobs so they can, and they call these things bots, which is so funny to me because like what I think they probably are is like almost like Capybara scripts or like Selenium scripts maybe is a better way of saying it.
Probably,
where they just like, you know, start up a Windows machine. They have it, have some software on it running, like take in some CSV file and they like push the buttons and do the things as if they were a real person.
Right. Because, right, it's so, using the software is so annoying that we would rather pay another company to write something to make the software do all the things for us rather than having to use it
ourselves. Having engineers actually improve the tool to meet the admin where they actually are. Okay. So I get a SOS from this company because they're trying like, so at one point we did not have two-factor authentication and we added it to our admin accounts. So then the people who wrote these scripts had to change the scripts to include 2FA processes when they're actually signing the bot into the admin tool to do the thing they're trying to do.
Okay.
They used the program Authy to do this. Authy is just a at the time it was a Windows program that allowed you to put in your, you know, your email, your password, and then, you know, do the 2FA dance to get the code in there, and then now you can use Authy to paste in your one-time password.
Okay.
Authy became end of life. It's no longer going to be allowed, like it's no longer be supported.
Okay.
So they had to go into their server and remove Authy and replace it with a program called WinOTP. Win for Windows and then one-time password OTP. So they were saying, like, can we do this? I'm like, yeah, I don't care. Go ahead, do it. So I get an SOS from them saying, we made a mistake and we need some help recovering the server. I knew nothing about this, but apparently these Windows machines are EC2 instances in our AWS account.
Okay.
What they had done was they went to the Windows Store trying to install this WinOTP, like the Apple App Store or the Apple, the Apple Mac Store, the Mac App Store. There we go.
The Mac Store.
It's software that's been like, you know, somewhat
vetted to some degree.
Yes.
Yeah.
So they went there. They tried to install this thing. They couldn't get it to work. So instead, this knucklehead installed a command line tool by the same name, WinOTP, but it didn't behave the same way. Instead of being a way to like copy and paste one-time passwords into a website, it put OTP on like the admin, like user, like the user account of the machine. So they added a one-time password and then like
to the box, essentially.
To the box, essentially. But like didn't write any of the codes down.
Whoops.
So they lock themselves out of this server and they're asking me for help. They're like, can you remote desktop in? I'm like, I don't have a remote desktop. I haven't used a Windows, like I cannot do any of the things that you're asking me to do. So then we try to like do all these things, like removing the volume from the EC2 instance, put it on a different one so they could like remove the application. It was like a total nightmare. I ended up throwing in the towel because we could not get this. We could not. I mean, and like, of course not. Like, you shouldn't be able to remove a one-time password software from the machine. The whole point is to
It's a security-based thing. Yeah.
Anyway, that could be improved. that happened.
Oh man.
Okay.
That's like the tech support call from your parents, you know, where it's like, yeah, the VCR isn't doing the thing anymore. And you're like, what does that have to do with your computer? And then they tell you, and you're like, I didn't want to know. I didn't want to know how you made all those Rube Goldberg machines work over there.
All right. What went well for you? I'm surprised, but what went well for you is spring breaking.
It could be improved next week. We'll find out. It started today.
Oh, okay.
Spring break is today.
Ours started Monday.
Okay. Well, the teachers union here has it where it always is the week following Easter. Right.
We talk about this every year. Yep, I remember that.
And let me clarify, because I recently, now that I work on a team of multi-European folks, I'm talking about Catholic and Protestant Easter. Okay.
Oh.
Because the Eastern Orthodox Church has Easter in like a month.
Oh, okay. It took Jesus longer for them.
It does feel fun. if you want to go on the deep dive, it's because of the differences between the Julian and the Gregorian calendar.
What? That's hilarious.
The Gregorian calendar is the one that the Catholic Church, you know,
and the imposed. Julian calendar is the one that.
Yeah, it's the Julian calendar is the one from like the Roman Empire.
Like Julius Caesar?
Yeah, exactly.
Okay. Got it.
Yeah. Oh man, it's wild too. When you go back, like, I learned so many things reading about this, but like before the Julian calendar, like there were, I think, 10 months a year, and then one of them was a variable length. It didn't. It's like, I'm serious. Yeah. That's how it worked. Yeah. And like whoever was in charge could choose how long that month was.
What?
Which means that whoever the politicians were would make that month longer to extend their rule.
Their power? What?
Yeah. Yeah. It's bizarre. That's literally how it worked. Anyway. Oh, and also.
Is it better now?
A little bit. I mean, have you ever had a problem with date math or time zones?
Yeah, I have.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, the whole reason the Gregorian calendar exists is because they corrected a leap year problem. Right?
The in leap the year Julian problem. Calendar?
Yeah, the Julian calendar had it every 4 years. A leap year. That's it.
Got it.
And then the Gregorian calendar is like, wait a minute, we're drifting away from the equinox, which is how Easter is determined.
What?
Yeah, and so they're like, we can compensate for this.
And they improved the algorithm.
They did. So now every 100 years, it's not a leap year, unless it's every 400 years. Yeah, 400, yeah,
yeah. Yeah, something like that.
So you can still do this. You can still go on your Mac app or any or any Unix based system if you use the Cal program. If you go back to the year, what is it, 1584 maybe, you can see the date that they switched over, because there's like missing days. It was like, okay, we fixed the calendar going forward, but now we have to compensate for the drift that we have had for these past 1,000 years. Anyway,
so we're just gonna have like 40 days in a month.
No, it was the opposite. They had an October, I think, that was like 10 days long or something.
Oh my god.
Anyway, wild stuff. Spring break, Easter. Yeah. Date stuff could, apparently I'm really interested in it, because I just want to keep talking about that.
I know.
But yeah, the kids are home.
Yeah.
Kids are home, and we'll see how it goes next week.
Yeah, the kids were home this week and it went so-so. Jess is also off this week because it was her spring break. Right. So she was kind of trying to figure out what to do with those kids. And one of the things she set up was a day off for herself. So she set them up to go to like an art camp yesterday.
Okay.
Turns out it was like a bit of a mess. The woman showed up like 15 minutes late. So there were like a bunch of parents and kids just like waiting.
Oh boy.
She came in, she didn't say sorry, whatever. It was like
Pencils out, everyone!
So they ended up giving us $50 off. I think they gave us like half price.
Okay.
Because of this mistake. Then we also come to find out that like at some point, like pretty quick after lunch, she just like ran out of activities and just like watched a movie for most of the afternoon. And it wasn't like intentional. Like they watched Big Hero 6. It wasn't like, you know, like some art related movie or something.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Oh, it's like art camp. As long as I feel like art.
Right, right. But like at one point, Jack didn't want to do what they were doing, so he just like found a book and started reading.
I don't – correct me if I'm wrong, but it doesn't sound like you'll return to this camp.
I don't think so, even though it was nice to have just had that break. But
yeah.
We got to get cooking here, Josh, because we only have like 8 minutes left. Okay. I'm going to stay and could be improved. Stay. I'm going to go to could be improved and say that Jack got braces. So he Woo. Has a crossbite. The dentist said enough of his teeth are in and solidified that you can take him to the ortho. Took him in. They checked him out. They said he could do braces or Invisalign. We opted for braces. He got them on. Just took them on Tuesday. Maybe it was like a 2:30. By 5 o'clock, the one brace for his crooked tooth had popped off.
Wow.
And so it's like sliding around in his mouth.
Oh, like you haven't gone back yet?
No, and then the next day.
Oh, okay.
We had to take him in and have him put it back on.
Like, oh, we forgot the cement on that one.
Yeah, you know, just $2,500 whenever you're ready. But yeah, we did forget to put cement on that one.
It's no problem, you know. We can put it back on, but we do charge triple if it's only the next day.
Yeah. Have any of your kids had braces yet? I assume not.
You kidding me? Oliver's on round two of his braces.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. I forgot Anna, those Anna has, are kind of like...
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Anna had braces round one, but it is going to be like... I think all of them are going to have like a round or two. They come by it honestly. My teeth were all messed up and I had braces for 4 years growing up.
Oof. It's tough.
It was rough.
You ever have any of the braces pop off?
And how?
Oh yeah.
I had like this tooth here. I'm pointing at a like the pointy canine kind of tooth.
Yeah, yeah.
It was like up where my nose is. Like it never descended. And so I had an operation where they put basically brace up on that tooth.
Holy shit. To bring it down.
To bring it down. And they connected it to the rest of my braces. That thing came off twice. Oh. Like under the gum. Like it came off twice. Josh. Which means I had 3 oral surgeries.
Oh my god!
To keep reattaching it. Yeah, it was terrible.
Yikes.
But that was years ago. I was only 14 or 15, so.
Yeah. Who cares about that guy?
Who cares? That guy is like not even me in terms of cellular reproduction.
Yeah, Shepathesis. Is that how you say it?
Oh, because you yeah, because it rebuilds itself. Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah.
Anyway, let's move on. We just don't have time. could be improved from you. This damn game you've got me on.
Yeah, that's a thing. Slice and dice. You sent me a text that just said your next obsession with a link to the game. Mm-hmm. And I checked it out like an idiot because now it is my next obsession.
It's so good, right?
I'm so mad at you. I mean, I've been having way too long of poops. Let's put it that way.
Yeah, you're pretty much always in the bathroom these days.
Pretty much. A dad needs privacy somehow.
That's right. So the game is roguelike, meaning you do like runs.
You do runs. They can last up to maybe an hour. A run, and the motif is you have like dice, but instead of typical dice, they are six-sided, but they're like the abilities of the players are on.
They don't have numbers on them. They have abilities.
Right. They have abilities. There's modifiers that can affect the dice, and there's various roles, and you have a party, and that party can – you kind of go up an increasing difficulty through. The standard one is 20
rounds 20 levels. Of battles against monsters. Yeah. They also have dice, so they're rolling on their turn and getting abilities randomly assigned to them. While you're rolling and getting abilities, you get re-rolls. So like if you're a fighter, gets a roll that you wish was better, you can like roll again. Hopefully mm-hmm. it gets a better roll.
Yep. Yeah, and there's, especially when you start out, there's a few sides of the die that are like basically like automatically stab yourself in the foot, pretty much. It's yeah. like what? It's like yeah. your party is so bad that they're just like kind of falling over themselves. Mm-hmm. But this is a good game. This is, it's also, it's pixel like art.
Yes. It's a good game executed very well.
Yeah. Also, I think it's kind of funny that there's so many like game modes.
Mm-hmm.
There's like, there's enough that the developer put them in, folders.
Yeah.
So there's like the cool folder, the creative folder, the cursed folder, and the crappy folder.
Yeah.
And there's one I haven't unlocked even.
Yeah, so. Me too. I don't think I even have unlocked creative.
Wild stuff.
Yeah, it's a really good game, Slice and Dice. Okay, let's move over to a discussion topic from you. 70th plus 50th plus retirement party for my in-laws.
Yeah, so I could have mentioned this during the spring break conversation, but next weekend we're heading down to Cincinnati because my parents-in-law, yeah. they just retired in the fall.
Okay.
They're celebrating their 50th wedding anniversary, or this is already past too, and their 70th birthdays, right? So okay. all of these happen, all these things happen within like 5 months of each other. Mm-hmm. And so
they're having a big party.
Yeah, and we're throwing it actually.
Oh, nice.
Like it's more of an open house. And Bethany printed out invites.
Nice.
You know, the invites were like actually from their high school prom. It was like a picture of them from our high school prom because they've been together that long.
Wow.
Or some dance. I don't remember exactly which one. But anyway, I'm in charge of the playlist, so I have to start working on that.
Yeah.
But, you know, there'll probably be pictures. Bethany, this is kind of her she thrives in this kind of environment. She is going to be hosting, you know, like various games and other kinds of things, usually themed around these people. Yeah. So
that's fun.
My in-laws. So we'll be down there for the second part of the spring break.
You just go for like a couple nights?
Yeah, exactly. A couple nights. Yep.
Okay. Well, my last question for you, the hardest hitting question I've got for dinner.
We might try doing pizza.
What?
Let me finish. At a restaurant.
What? You're gonna go to a restaurant?
Yeah, we're gonna try this. We're gonna try this. I know.
That's a great idea.
Yeah. So that's what we're gonna try.
Okay.
I'll let you
know. I think it's gonna work.
I mean, I hear they have food there.
Yeah. I have a good feeling about this. For us, we have Grandma and Grandpa taking the kids, so we'll see. We haven't quite determined what the adults are doing tonight, but I think we're gonna. I think we're gonna have dinner.
That sounds good. You should eat all the things you can't eat now that Jack has braces, like popcorn and saltwater taffy.
More nuts.
That's right.
Okay. Speaking of which, we gotta go.
Oh, and okay.
I want you to know that I love you. Goodbye.
Hey, I love you, Slice and Dice.
Goodbye.
Bye.